now on ABC Radio National, it's time for Counterpoint, an hour of opinion and discussion with Paul Comrie-Thompson and Michael Duffy.
Hello and welcome to the program. Today we take a new look at a big question, the collapse of civilizations. Popular writer Jared Diamond has suggested that environmental mismanagement led to the collapse of ancient societies. But Norman Yoffe, an archaeologist from Michigan University, says that supposed explanation is far too simplistic. And he asks, did the people of Easter Island really commit ecocide?
Questioning collapse, a new look at ancient civilizations coming up later in the program. Also today, we'll take a good hard look at conspiracy theories.
From Hollywood to the blogosphere, from the assassination of US President John F. Kennedy to the causes of the global financial crisis, there is a constant stream of theories about them, an unknown elite acting in secret who are controlling our lives.
Today, David Aronovich joins us to throw a refreshing bucket of cold water on some of the more crazy ideas going round. He asks, why have conspiracy theories become such a part of modern life? Are they just a bit of harmless fun, or is there something more sinister and damaging about them?
David Aronovich, author of Voodoo History, says it's time for a bit more scepticism with a strong dose of common sense. Just why have we become so gullible?
But first, there's a growing scepticism about the usefulness of foreign aid to the Third World. Does it help, or might it, as some critics are now saying, actually make things worse? Our guest now is Jonathan Glenny, who's worked as a policy analyst in international development charities. He's currently the country representative in Colombia for Christian Aid UK and Ireland, and he's also the author of a new book, The Trouble with Aid. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
It sounds, I don't know, counterintuitive that it would be a bad thing to give poor people more money. Can you run through some of the reasons for that? And I know you've described some of them in the book. Let's start with the policy conditions attached to aid, which you say sometimes can cause problems. What can go wrong there?
Well, sure. I mean, in the book, I try to separate out the various impacts of aid. And what I call for is not aid pessimism. You know, aid's just a disaster, which is what some people say, including a recent kind of high-profile book by Dambisa Moyo. But not aid optimism either, but aid realism. What are the impacts? And let's have a balanced assessment of them. There are some really beneficial impacts. Schools are built. Children are vaccinated. But there are some also negative impacts. And one of those, as you mentioned, is policy conditionality. When rich countries and international institutions give money, they don't just give it for free. They insist on certain policies being adopted by the recipient country. Big countries and donors wanted to ensure that the aid they give doesn't just have a small impact, but has a massive impact. So especially in Africa, they imposed economic policy conditions that really transformed the policy environment in Africa, especially liberalizing markets, opening up the continent for trade and investment. And in some countries, that's an important step on the road to development. If you look at China, the way it's opened up recently has certainly led to a lot of growth. But in Africa, the production base wasn't ready for that. And what we've seen, unfortunately, since the 80s, at the beginning of all those policy conditions, is the decimation of many key industries that would have been key to the growth of Africa. And unfortunately, I think it's true that donor countries don't just give aid altruistically. They also seek to profit from the aid they give. In other words, we insist on certain policy conditions that suit us. When African countries liberalize their water industry, it's European water companies that move in. When they liberalize their coffee industry, we're the ones that buy cheap coffee. Those kind of issues. So that's some of the complex areas that I bring out in the book as well. Mm. There's certainly a huge amount of altruism involved, but also there is self-interest.
And Jonathan, do you think that maybe the West should just stop imposing policy conditions, or should we simply improve those policy conditions?
I think my emphasis is on stopping them. I think to a certain extent there will always be policy conditions, and some of them are acceptable. There's a lot of corruption around the world, and accountability conditions are important, you know, demonstrating that the money that's been given has been spent as it said it was going to be spent. But overall, this is one of the key messages of my book, and I think also of this time when neoliberal economics and the liberalisation of the financial industry that we've seen over the last 10, 15, 20 years is really coming under scrutiny during this economic crisis. I think what we need to call for now is an opening up, a freeing up of what policies are acceptable. in developing countries. In the last 20 or 30 years, so many policies, such as protection of infant industries, such as propping up banks, exactly, in fact, what the Western countries are doing at the moment, have basically been banned to recipient countries if they want to receive aid. I think now is the time to say, well, actually, we don't know the best way to develop. It's a very, very complex issue, and we need to start handing power back to poor countries to yes, make mistakes sometimes, but to develop in the way that they choose to. And it's so important, because it's not only the policies, but how those policies are come to. And the development of accountability between citizen and state, the development of democracy and human rights, is absolutely vital. And when we impose policies, we undermine that.
Well, what about a related issue that you raise in your book, which is that aid dependency can undermine basic institutions in some of these countries?
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, that's linked to the point I've just been making. And when we started giving large amounts of aid to Africa in the 70s and early 80s, you know, we didn't expect, I don't think, to be giving them still more aid 30 years on. And I think there's a big difference. A lot of countries have really become dependent on aid. Therefore, you can't just cut off aid, because a lot of people will lose their jobs, and a lot of functioning services will simply cease to function. But what I'm suggesting is, because of the huge aid dependency that's now arisen, we need to set out a timetable over 10, 20 years, not to increase aid, which is what a lot of people are calling for, but actually to reduce aid. To reduce aid in order to reduce aid dependency, so that countries can flourish and grow slowly, yes, and with difficulty, but in an accountable way, responding to citizens. In fact, if you look at some of the ways that Western countries have developed, one of the key relationships is between taxpayer and government. As long as government doesn't rely on citizens for taxes, it doesn't have to rely on them for its accountability and for support. And unfortunately, in a lot of African countries and all over the world, more money comes in from aid givers than from their own taxes. And therefore, governments respond to the requirements of donors, not to their own citizens. Mm. So that relationship is vital for development.
Okay, so earlier in the interview, you suggested that the West might be doing things other than giving money. So you've just suggested now that we could reduce the amount of aid gradually. What are some of the other things that we should be doing parallel with that?
Well, a lot of people that campaign for more aid say, look, you know, Africa's really poor. Africa needs aid. It doesn't need aid, but it does need money. It is very poor. But there are other much more important ways of ensuring that Africa has the money it needs to develop. In fact, far more money leaves Africa every year than arrives in aid or in foreign investment or in other forms. That's called capital flight, and it's actually been allowed by the way that we've liberalized the financial systems, allowing tax havens to run riot, really, and undermining a closely monitored movement of money around the world. We need to, and this actually came out of the G20 meeting, we need to clamp down on tax havens. They serve no real fundamental purpose apart from hiding money and avoiding tax. So we need to find other ways of stopping money leaving poor countries. We also need to allow countries to develop their production in order to trade more. And that means, like I said earlier, really giving them the freedom to use all the kind of policies that now developed countries use during their development. And we've not allowed poor countries to do that in the last 30 years because of a very dominant neoliberal model of development. And that is now being seriously questioned, and has been for many years, actually. But increasingly, people in power are questioning that model.
What about the current economic crisis? Do you think that the fact that the amount of aid may drop and the West will become less enthusiastic about neoliberalism, do you think that might actually have a sort of unforeseen consequence of helping in some of the issues you've raised?
I think that's happening. I think every crisis is an opportunity. And, you know, it's difficult to predict what's going to happen. But we've already seen, things happening in Western countries that were really unthinkable only a year ago or 2 years ago, especially, for instance, the almost nationalizing of many of the big banks, the protection of the car industry, those kind of policies that actually have been going on, and the West has always protected its industries, but in a much more open manner now. And I think that will lead to a serious questioning of the direction that the Western countries have been going in the last 20 years, and also the direction they've been thus imposing on poorer countries. It will be very difficult now for Americans or British to turn up in an African country and refuse to allow them to protect their industries now that we're doing exactly that.
Jonathan, there's a silver lining there, maybe, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Jonathan Glennie's book, The Trouble with Aid, Why Less Could Mean More for Africa, is published by Zed Books, and that's available locally through Palgrave Macmillan.
Coming up next, Questioning Collapse. Norman Yoffe from Michigan University critiques the explanations given by popular writer Jared Diamond and others of how and why some ancient civilizations collapsed. Were these disintegrations self-inflicted, or were there other factors at play?
Education is Australia's third largest export, and the fees paid by international students keep our universities afloat. But have government authorities and education providers been paying enough attention to the welfare of those students? Personal safety is not the only issue. There's workplace abuse and housing problems and isolation. International Students in the National Interest with me, Peter Mayers. Download or stream this program from the Radio National website.